Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
What is going on, guys? It is your boy Dylan at Thunder Chats coming to you with our presenting sponsor, BetOnline.ag. BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team, and remember to use our promo code BELEAVE, that is capital letters BLEAV, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. What is up, Thunder fans? This is your boy Dylan from the future, coming to you live from his car. So you're in for a great episode with Albert Gim and Corey Talba of No Ceilings. We're going to be talking a little bit of Thunder basketball, but also talking NBA draft, because if there's No Ceilings, we're talking draft. As you guys know, the NCAA tournament starts today, it starts today. Sorry, I got a little confused. Or maybe it starts tomorrow. Either way, the tournament starts this weekend, and we are previewing the NCAA tournament, talking a little bit about Corey gives his Final Four predictions, but talking about players that could see their stock rise in the tournament, talking about some of their favorite prospects in general. Of course, I got them on there. I had to have some self-serving Reed Shepard talk, so hopefully there's a chance you guys might be convinced with some of the things they say about Reed Shepard, because they feel more like me than some of the other guys about it. But I digress. The whole point of coming on here before the podcast started is I wanted to apologize in advance because I daddy double booked yesterday. So my oldest son had soccer practice. It was his first soccer practice, so I wasn't used to it. So when the guy said they needed to do it earlier, I was like, yeah, it's no problem. That's usually, the kids can go to bed a little bit early. I can rock the podcast. No problem. We've done it a million times before. But my son had soccer practice and actually ended his practice about the time we started podcasting. So I was alone with Nova, and you will hear Nova in the background a lot. He was having a grand old time watching Sing 2. So he's making some joyous noises in the background. And then when my wife and my kids get home, you'll hear AJ say, "Hi, Daddy," at some point in the podcast. And they quickly realize that I'm podcasting and they quiet down. But just explaining some background noises going on. At that point, once they get home, we kind of switch duties and I go back to my podcast area, and there's no more interruptions. But just wanted to explain that before we get on here. Again, it's an awesome conversation, as it always is, with the guys in No Ceiling, with Corey and Albert. We always have a great time recapping past podcasts as well. So you guys are in for a treat. Hope you guys enjoy it. And after I stop talking, you will hear our intro. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Top of Thunder podcast. I'm your host, Dylan Huntzinger at Thunder Chats. We are part of the BeLeave Network, and this podcast is brought to you by BetOnline.ag. We have a very special episode today. A lot of exciting stuff going on Thunderland. We're going to talk about that a little bit, but
the NCAA tournament, I guess, technically starts tonight with the first four beginning tonight. So we are going to be previewing all the draft prospects that are going to be kind of making a name for themselves this week with a few of our favorite draft analysts. But before we get into that, I got to introduce them to the pod. So without further ado, returning to the podcast, your favorite draft analyst, the Wolves of Ball Street, the ones, the only, the incomparable, Corey Tolable and Albert Gim of No Ceilings. Welcome back, everybody.
Thanks, it's your boy.
Always a great time to have you guys on. I think last time, you know, this isn't like, you know, saying this is misevaluation because the dude's still in the G League, but I remember last time we had the great conversation talking about Leonard Miller. I think Albert said, I just don't think he's good at basketball. Absolutely amazing.
I did say that.
He was very polarizing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But no, it's all in good fun, man. You know, still too early in the evaluation. We're not taking victory laps or anything like that. I just remember that happening, and Alex had him super high on his board, and like you just shattered his hopes and dreams. It was a great time, but we're hopefully not going to shatter any hopes and dreams tonight because we're going to start this podcast talking about, you know, the team that is named after the Oklahoma City Thunder. Obviously, you guys are draft analysts, but you all are basketball fans first and foremost. So you guys haven't been living in a hole. I'm sure you've seen the success of the Thunder. Currently the one seed in the Western Conference. Is this kind of what you expected, this leap happening too soon or this soon? Or like, you know, what was your thought process coming into this year?
I expected them to be a top four seed. You know, I did started an NBA podcast with my buddies Joe and Larry and in one of the first episodes, you know, the preseason predictions, I said that I believe the Thunder are going to finish in the top four. So they drafted really good players for a really long time, and they already, you know, and they traded for a superstar years ago. None of it surprising. We were really big on Chet in his draft year. And, you know, I had him as like the far and away clear cut number one prospect. And I've never wavered for that, even after last year when he wasn't playing and Paolo, you know, came on really strong. So, I think they're legit. I felt that way, you know, since Chet got healthy. So, huge fan of watching them. They play the most beautiful brand of basketball where everybody's, you know, making quick decisions and they can cook. They got guys who can cook when they need it, but they just have good players all around that can all dribble, pass, shoot, and defend. And when you have that many players who can do that, it's really fun to watch.
You know what? When it comes to NBA team predictions, not my strong suit. Not to say that I even like did any predictions, but I just, if I'm totally honest with you guys, I didn't have the Thunder being the number one seed in the Western Conference. That just wasn't on my board. But also that's why I'm not a fortune teller. This OKC Thunder has been a lot of fun to watch, man. I want to say, obviously seeing the growth and the development of J-Dub, Jalen Williams, has been just so amazing for me. I'm so excited for him. Really glad that he's playing really well. You have the superstar, supernova, whatever superlative you want to throw on him in SGA and what he's doing. Obviously, he continues to be just unbelievable. And like Corey said, like Chet has been exactly what we thought he was going to be. And you know, Chet's a guy that I got to scout live in person a couple times before he was drafted. And I remember just telling, you know, our team and telling whoever would listen. I was like, this guy's going to be really damn good at basketball. It won't be an issue for him. And everyone who thought he was skinny, I said the same thing a million times during that draft cycle. I was like, I stood literally right next to him. His legs are not as skinny as it looks on TV. He's going to be just fine. And obviously he missed his rookie season to injury, but this season's been great. He's been tough. He's been durable. He's played a ton and he's having an incredible season. So really happy for the Thunder. Obviously we love coming on this pod with you. And so really excited to see what's going on there in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, man, it's been a whirlwind. I mean, don't feel bad about, you know, not having a good prediction for this year, Albert, because I mean, I had us predicted as a 3 seed, and I was considered like the homer of the pod with that prediction. I had us at 51 wins, 3 seed. I'm like, you know, you guys know me. I'm like super like optimistic with all my predictions and everything like that. And it feels like I've shortchanged them at this point, but it is really cool. And I love bringing you guys on here, like anybody from No Ceilings, because you guys were like, you know, very high in Chet Holmgren. I mean, a lot of people were, but, you know, everybody wanted to shift Paolo into that number one spot as the draft got closer. And obviously the Magic did. And then, you know, Albert, I think you actually had J-Dub on the pod as an interview, right?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Got that connection. And of course, Albert with the greatest comparison to a player I've ever heard, and comparing Case Wallace to a great pair of scissors. I mean, just truly remarkable stuff.
I forgot about that. You're right.
I think you also compared someone to a wagon at one point.
I remember I compared Leonard Miller to a Pez dispenser, I think. Corey really liked that one, I remember.
I love it, man. Your comparisons are spot on. Jesus, I'm going to die. All right, guys. Anyways, so let's talk about this draft class. You know, as I'm trying to collect my voice, Jesus Christ. So this draft class, obviously, even go back to last year, nobody was excited about it. Everybody was trying to find a way to kind of take away from it, say that it was one of the weakest classes that we've had. And that might be the case, but I've heard a lot of people say, I've heard you guys say, I've heard people on No Ceilings say that, you know, if you're looking for star power, this probably isn't necessarily the class, but there's value to be had. There's good players that can come in, fill roles, and contribute to teams. So, like, what is your all kind of summation? And I'll start with Albert here because Corey started on the last one. What's kind of your summation on this draft class compared to ones in years past?
I think the biggest thing that I've been thinking about a lot on my own, I was in the gym this morning listening to a pod, and I remember thinking to myself, like, whenever there's a weaker class, people, you're always going to get that wave where people are going to come in and be like, hey, wait a second, there might be some gems here. You know, you're going to find some contributors. So there's going to be kind of like that overcorrection a little bit. And then you kind of have to come back and find equilibrium a little bit and find that middle ground and realize, like, it's okay for us to characterize this class as it not being like the strongest class. I'm not going to hop on your pod here and be like, this class sucks, because I actually don't believe that. I think there will be some contributors in this class, and who knows, man, like there have been classes where, you know, it's deemed as weak and then players severely outperform, you know, where they get drafted and whatever their pre-draft evaluations were. So I think the best way to put it is, I think the people that tell you that this isn't the strongest draft, I think they're correct in saying that. At the same time, I wouldn't go so far and be like, oh, but like, you know, you never know. There might be three super. I don't know if I believe in that either. I think I'm somewhere right in the middle where I think good teams, smart teams with, you know, good front offices and good scouts out there and good developmental coaches and programs in place, I think they'll be able to find some gems and develop those players into contributors. But I think it's 100% fair to say that this isn't the strongest draft class.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, the thing that has stood out the most for this draft class is because that it's not quote unquote the strongest, and there is a lot of uncertainty at the top of the draft. Nobody has established themselves as the clear cut number one, number two, number three pick. You know, it's kind of like the type of thing where it's like there are any number of top three combinations that you can tell me are going to go in the top three on draft night, and I would believe all of them. And that goes for even the number one pick. Like, I think I've legitimately seen seven guys mocked from different outlets at number one where I was like, oh yeah, I could see that. That's an outcome that it makes sense. Like, even if I not to say I would necessarily agree with the process behind it, but I'd be like, huh, the draft's unpredictable. I can see that, you know. Yeah. Oklahoma City Thunder fans are probably shocked when Josh Giddey was taken in that draft. Like, that was shocking. Albert and I were there, you know, there was an audible, oh, you know, it was so the NBA draft being unpredictable. I think that the thing that is, you know, really stood out is just there are so many different combinations and ways that this draft could fall. And for our company, that makes this class really fun. And there was a lot of fun guys to cover last year, but everybody knew who was going number one. And it even got to a point towards the draft where we pretty had on good authority who we knew was going to go number two. You know, we knew that Brandon Miller was probably going to go. I mean, our site, credit to us, I think we were seven of the first seven picks we got correct on draft night.
That's awesome.
And I don't think that that's going to happen this year unless, you know, we get, you know, strong intel on how the draft might shape out, which is possible. But like, as it would stand right now, I would be like, oh yeah, I don't feel confident saying that we're going to nail it in that regard up top, because it's just so unpredictable, and that's what makes it fun. So, you know, all right. So KOC has Reed at number one. So do I. Like, is it weird? Maybe, but this is a weird draft. Like, you want to tell me you got Cody Williams at number one? Okay, I get it. Dude's big and his brother's awesome and he's finishing 70%, you know, at the rim. Like, I get it. Alex Saar, 7-1. Like, sure. I'm sold, you know, like it. So that's the cool part about this draft is just there are so many weird things. One of the guys that people are highest on is 23 years old and Dalton Connect. Like, you know, it's just fun.
Yeah, no, it definitely goes a lot of different ways. You know, you mentioned a couple of those players kind of at the top that people are considering. Cody Williams, Alex Saar, obviously both brothers of, you know, players on the Thunder or, you know, their G League affiliate, the Blue. Olivier Saar has been a two-way player a couple of times. I think he's actually had a full contract last year before we waived him again. But, you know, obviously there are connections there. I just want to ask you guys, you know, obviously the order can change. The lottery is the lottery. You know, our pick is going to be very low, and it might not even be ours. So, like, destiny is not in the Thunder's hands in terms of where their draft pick is going to be. But – kind of in the range, I guess, late lottery is what we're looking at right now. Who is your favorite prospects for OKC currently? We'll start with Corey on this one.
I, as it stands now in that range, I really like what Donovan Clingan could bring to the team. I think OKC is in the type of position where, you know, they can kind of toe the line between drafting best player available and also looking for guys that fit. On the surface, you might be like, oh, well, Clingan doesn't shoot, so maybe that's not the type of prospect that OKC typically would take. But again, they took Josh Giddey, Jalen Williams, you know, guys who have questionable shots. What they really like are good basketball players who are multi-skilled with good feel and, you know, can kind of mesh with different roster constructions. And I think that Clingan can, because what he's done this year is taken a really big leap as a playmaker. You know, Connecticut runs this really, you know, awesome motion offense where guys are always, you know, coming off screens and cutting, and Clingan's done a really good job, you know, finding guys either out of the post or even at the top of the key, and hitting cutters. And, you know, he's really good ball placement and timing. And then he's a really good rebounder, which is something that I think OKC could, you know, certainly use help with, cleaning the defensive glass. And then, you know, him and Chet out, you know, guarding and holding the fort down defensively would be really interesting, because he's a really good rim protector, super long, super big, a little bit of a weird mover. But, you know, he's back-to-back seasons where he's been one of the, you know, more dominant defensive forces in college basketball, and UConn is, again, you know, one of the favorites to win the national championship after they did last year. So another winning pedigree kind of player. I think he would be really interesting for OKC. It never hurts to get a guy who, you know, threw 40 on your Wildcats recently, who could shoot the cover off of the ball. And Dalton, 6'6", 6'7". Kentucky did get the win. So, you know, mm-hmm. Yeah, they did huge their job. Yeah, huge win. So, but dude is a bucket. He's 6'6", 6'7". I think he's going to have a plus wingspan when he measures. He's strong. He's got big, broad shoulders, legitimate athlete. You know, mid post game has shown some passing flashes. You know, I know he's old, but like, the fact that he went from JUCO to a mid-major to now dominating in the SEC where he averaged 25 and a half points per game. I think he's a really interesting prospect that could potentially be available, at or around that slot. Kyle Filipowski is a popular name as well. He's kind of more of the dribble pass shoot, archetype, 7 foot, really shown some nifty stuff as a passer, can put it on the deck from the perimeter, create a little bit. His jumper looks prettier than it has been effective over the last 2 years, but it has improved a lot this year. Winning pedigree, smart player. And I think he's really been impressive defensively. Because if you look at him, you would think that, he's a guy who's going to get dusted out on the perimeter. And I think he actually moves well out there, and he's been able to get lower in his stance this year. And he's been better as a rim protector, but that's not the type of player that he is ultimately anyway. So he's the type of guy. Oh, here's a guy who has this pretty shot, but it's not going in. Huh. I wonder how we could fix that. Oh, how about working with Chip England? That sounds nice, right? Like, and if Filipowski becomes a legitimate shooter who's shooting in 38, 39% from three, 75, 76, maybe 80% from the line, now all of a sudden you're looking at a guy whose ceiling is much higher than, it looks like right now at the moment.
Part of the problem of doing a pod with Corey, and us agreeing a lot of the times and seeing things pretty eye to eye, when you sent us the outline for this pod, I wrote down three names because I was like, I'll be good with three names. There's no way Corey's going to hit all three. And then Corey went and just hit all three of the guys that I wrote down for you guys. But it's okay. This is part of the job.
100.
Exactly. And also, this is why, we get paid the big bucks to be draft analysts, right? I got to think on my feet. A couple names for me. Obviously, I wanted to say Klingon, Connect, and Filipowski, just because of, pretty much everything that Corey said was what I was going to say as well in a similar vein. But a couple names that I thought might be interesting, maybe a little bit different, it might be a little polarizing with your listeners, but I wanted to throw them out there just in case, because you never know, it might happen. So the first name that I wanted to throw out there was he's one of my personal favorites. He is a little bit raw. He's one of these guys that had like a huge growth spurt getting used to his body. But in his freshman season for the Miami Hurricanes, has shot the absolute cover off the ball from outside. Dead eye 3-point shooter. He's listed 6'8", but his teammates think he might be 6'9", and even still growing. But he can really handle the ball, has really good passing feel. He played on kind of a nightmare of a Miami roster. That team was not a lot of fun to watch. And yet, he fit his role perfectly. They asked him to kind of stand around in the corner and take threes and also sometimes, initiate some early offense. So Keyshawn George is a really interesting name for me. One of my favorites. I wrote about him during this cycle. He has, some question marks to him. Obviously, he's not an explosive athlete at all. He's pretty ground bound. Once again, he's still getting used to his frame a little bit. So, I know some people might be like, another Usman Jang. He's such a good shooter already I really like that one. Another name, if I'm honest with you, not one of my favorites, but a guy who was highly regarded heading into the season, was listed by some outlets as like the number one option in Maris Bouzelis of the G League Ignite. I'm just mentioning him here just because you never know. I think he could be, let's say the Thunder, it's possible that you guys end up with the 11th pick, right? If I'm not right, I think that's what Tankathon has you guys going right now. So yeah. He could be there, 6'10", 6'11", guy can shoot the ball, good standstill shooter. I personally think he's got a lot of work to do to become like an effective NBA player. I think defensively there's some real questions. The baseline with him is at least he's tall and he can shoot the ball. He's got some guard skills to him, got some passing to him. But in my opinion, I think he still needs a lot of time and a lot of development. But ending up on an OKC team that has a really strong roster, adding a guy like Bouzelis and giving him maybe a year or two to develop might not be the worst scenario. Were two of the names that I was thinking. If you guys end up a little bit later, like after that, I don't know if that's even within your realm of possibilities. I do want to throw in two more names. I'll be quick with them. Number one, Tristan DeSilva from Colorado. Love him. a guy that I got to see play live, 6'9", can shoot the ball, can handle the ball, has a little bit of a post game. He is 6'9". Just absolutely great physique. Just one of these guys that you throw him on a basketball floor and you're like, you can put any team around him, he'll figure out a way to have an impact on the game. So one of these really like high IQ, easy to fit in type of guys. And then the last one, PJ Hall. I know Corey likes PJ Hall. I like PJ Hall, 6'9"-ish, really productive in college, improved outside shooter, can bang inside. His rim protection numbers have improved this season. He's got some real passing chops to him too. Not that, you know, he'd ever be like, you know, running your offense through him type of guy, but he can pass the ball a little bit. So those are the names that I'd like to throw your way.
Yeah, I remember, I don't remember which mock draft it was, but I remember you had our pick, Albert, when we were semi-high up in the lottery, and you took, is it Keyshawn, Kaishawn, George?
So it's spelled Kaishawn, but everyone says Keyshawn on his team.
Okay.
So,
well, hey, yeah. Listen, I'm smiling grim like an idiot in this podcast, so, like, yeah, I trust your expertise on this. But, yeah, I remember you asking – or you putting him in there, and, like, you know, your reasoning made sense, and I had to actually go look at him. I mean, if you're bringing in a guy that can shoot like that, you know, like you said, has some passing, has some feel, like, you know, he would fit into this offense, like, perfectly, you know, in terms of that. In terms of, like, bringing in the Usman Jang, you know, I'm still a firm believer in the Jang gang. You know, he's tearing it up in the G League. You know, he's just the I'm team a got too. A little bit ahead of him. Let's go, Corey. Corey. The Jang gang still is. Yeah, he's tearing it up in G League. You know, the team just got a little bit ahead of his development, and you know, he's had some flashes, like, you know, on the actual team. It's just, you know, he indecisiveness still a little bit. So that's a little frustrating, but not this isn't about Usman Jang. I'm glad you brought up Donovan Klingon, Corey, and Albert, you're going to bring him up because I remember who was it? I think KOC posted a mock a couple, maybe a week ago, and he had Donovan Klingon to the Thunder. And I, like, just hand up, like, you know, I'm obviously, like, I'm still smiling grim like an idiot in terms of, like, you know, the prospect evaluation, everything. But just knowing what I know from last year and a few games here and there from Donovan Klingon, I didn't think that he would fit like KOC was saying. And I quote tweeted, like, you know, we're not drafting Donovan Klingon, like, stop, like, give it a rest or whatever. Because how KOC was pitching it is he's a guy that starts next to Chet and moves Chet back to the four spot. And that's something that I've been vehemently against the entire time we've had Chet Holmgren on the roster. All these people saying he's too small to play the five. His natural position is the four. And it's like, brother, I just don't think you're watching the game if you think that's the case. And drafting him with the thought process of moving Chet, I'm completely out on. Now, if you're wanting to bring him in as a backup five, I think, you know, that's not inconsequential, but, like, you know, that doesn't make me as upset, I guess.
So, yeah, I mean, obviously, like, Chet at the five presents mismatches, mm-hmm. right? Like, because he's so skilled, he can shoot, he can take it off the bounce, all that stuff. And then defensively, he is just such a savant that he can figure out how to guard almost anybody. Where I think that if you're looking like, can they start together, right? First of all, I think Klingon hasn't proven that he could play 25 minutes at night yet.
Yeah.
He's got two seasons worth. Right now, this is his career high. He's at like 22 minutes per game or something like that. So his stamina is not there. That needs to be worked on. So right away, you're looking at a guy who is going to be coming in and being brought along slowly. Now, with that said, he can still play a big role, you know, almost the same way Kaysen is, in that, like, Kaysen has a big role. He's just not featured necessarily, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's filling in on the margins. Klingon can almost be a big man version of that, but where I think that Klingon ultimately has potential to start alongside Chet is that I do think that when you look at playoff matchups, and all of a sudden you are now in a position where you have to figure out where the mismatch is. The other team is figuring out where the mismatch is. Over a 7-game series, and now that the Thunder are right now, they're in the number one spot, you have to start thinking about okay, how do we match up with the people in our, the best teams in our conference in the short and long term? Jokic is going to be around for a while, right? Even a guy maybe like an Anthony Davis right now, you know, there are a lot of big men that are big, bulky, that over the course of a 7-game series, maybe you might have Klingon who could slide in, and ultimately now you're going to go a little bit big. Chet is fully capable of playing the four. You see what, how that kind of switches things up in a more situational starting scenario. Like, because I think if you just get married to what your starting lineup is in the playoffs, you're setting yourself up for potential failure because you're being stubborn. You know, you saw what happened and how basketball was revolutionized just because, you know, one of the people on Steve Kerr's staff was like, hey, maybe we should start Iggy. And, you know, and all of a sudden Draymond, and they're now the small ball revolution. So like, there are these different adjustments that you make the deeper you get into a playoff setting where you like to have options. And I think that Klingon, while he doesn't have to start necessarily, the fact that he can give you that option that you could go big because the way that the Thunder build, all of the players are so talented in different areas of the game. Like when you look at Klingon, you probably think he's just this big loafing post player, but like, that's not his game. He's a great roller. He's an excellent passer. Like, he does play a very modern game as a big man, to where now all of a sudden it's like, all right, let's go. Like, we have options, and you don't have to use the option, but you have it in your back pocket. And I think that's where Klingon can be really good.
Yeah. Just to piggyback off of what Corey said, you know, I was coming out of the trade deadline, a lot of, you know, media pundits were like, you know, what were the Thunder doing? Why aren't they looking for a backup center to support? You know, they looked at that Dallas trade they made to go get to go get Gafford. And a lot of people were like, hey, OKC has all the assets in the world. Why didn't they go add Gafford to their team? And in my opinion, adding a Klingon, like Corey mentioned, right, gives your roster the flexibility, the dexterity to kind of adjust and be able to play against, you know, different types of rosters. Like in the Western Conference, you guys could play Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets. You could play the Los Angeles Lakers with Anthony Davis, the Kings with Domantas Sabonis. There are some big dudes in the Western Conference. And I was looking at some of the advanced stats for the Thunder. You guys are currently on the season number 2 in net rating. I think you're number 5 in defensive rating, 3rd in offensive rating. I think the one weakness you guys have is that rebounding percentage. You guys are in the bottom 3. I think you guys are 28th in the league in terms of rebounding percentage. So adding a guy like Klingon, right, although some people might be like, that feels like some sort, like kind of like a high leverage pick to take him. Like, we started at the top of this pod that this isn't like the strongest draft class in the world, right? And so getting a guy like Klingon who could potentially be a contributor on your roster, a guy who can come in and either play next to Chet or be his backup at 7'2" with the skills that he has, as Corey mentioned. I mean, we recorded a pod on him today, and, you know, we're talking about his passing ability, the rebounding, the size, his touch around the rim, his mobility. There's a lot to like about Klingon that he can offer something of a different profile to this Oklahoma City roster. Obviously, you guys have a really good team. I mean, if you weren't a good team, you wouldn't be the one seed in the West, but adding a different profile of player that could also play alongside all your high feel, all your dribble, pass, and shoot able guys on your team, adding a big brawler kind of like Klingon, I think, does make a lot of sense, because he's not just a big dude. There is upside for him to continue to grow and, you know, improve on, you know, some of the other areas of his game as well.
Right. Yeah. I get the thought process behind that, you know, having another tool in your tool belt, like, you know, having the option, like you're saying. I think a lot of Thunder fans would say, like, you know, why, you know, we have J Will, like, you know, that's kind of what J Will's for. And, you know, depending on how you feel about J Will, you know, some games he's really great, and other games, you know, he isn't so great, and, you know, he only plays a few minutes here. I think there's a real possibility that, you know, we get into a matchup and we try to, you know, throw in Jalen Williams with Chet, which we've done a little bit more down the stretch, but not as much this season. And I've kind of, like, I guess, conspirized, is that a word? Whatever. Conspired, that's the word. Sorry.
There you go.
I've kind of conspired that, you know, Mark's kind of holding that close to his chest, you know, for whenever, or close to his vest whenever we get into a playoff series. You know, there's an there's a possibility that, you know, we play a Nikola Jokic, we play Anthony Davis or somebody like that, and, you know, we find out that that doesn't work in the playoffs and we have to address it. Then I absolutely understand the idea of getting Kling. And I just, I don't know. I feel like, you know, like I said, you know, obviously not just me, but also the Thunder, like, you know, they're probably waiting for that answer, that question to be answered in the playoffs as well. But that's just kind of my thought process, but I'm a little bit more open to it. You've convinced me a little bit more, so appreciate that.
Well, just think, if you want to, if you want a long playoff run, you expect that as the one seed, like that's the hope. Just think, look at all these big men. One, you know, Minnesota, you have Kat and Gobert, right? Like, you got two guys there. Denver, you have Jokic. The Clippers, even Zubac is like a big dude. Valanciunas in New Orleans. Sabonis in Sacramento. You know, in Dallas. You know, Dallas a little bit, you know, whatever, Gafford and
Lively.
Yeah. More profile like Chet. But, you know, with Phoenix, even Nurkic is a pretty big dude. And if now you think like, all right, we got to get through three different sets of guys who are kind of tough and physical. We don't want Chet to wear down. And like, you know, you look at J-Will, like J-Will's a nice player. He doesn't offer the kind of defense outside of like sliding in and taking charges, which cool in the regular season. I don't know if that's going to translate necessarily to the playoffs where things slow down and calls are maybe, you know, and especially with the trends that we're seeing just within the league. He just gives a different look and offers something. And again, he's 7'2". He's super long. Like it's just more length and defensive presence. And I don't know if you can get enough of that. I guess it would be like saying, like, if you had an opportunity, and because we compared him potentially down the line as to maybe one day he could be like a Brook Lopez kind of player, because, you know, personally, I believe in his shooting in the long term, not in the short term, but in the long term. If you can get a guy like Brook, would you be like, we like playing Chet that way? You'd figure it out because Brook is impactful. You know what I mean? So I think Kling could be that same kind of impactful player at some point.
Okay. Hey, that's fair. I love Splash Mountain. I'd love to have Splash Mountain in OKC. So I'm there with you. And, you know, like you said, you know, we got Chip England. So, I mean, if the man can turn Lou Dort into a 40% three-point shooter, then, you know, he could do some miracles. But let's transition to our next topic right after a word from our sponsors.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And we're back after that break. We are talking draft prospects and Thunder basketball with our friends Corey and Albert from No Ceilings. Guys, I want to ask you guys, you know, Thunder aside, but you as draft evaluators, you guys have been picking this class apart since the end of the draft last year. And even before that, who are your all's favorite draft prospects? And I'll start with Albert here.
Oh, boy. This is kind of a tough one. I'll say this, though. This class, as we've mentioned, is what it is. It's really been a big challenge this cycle. I'll be honest with you. It's really testing us, I think, in my opinion, as draft analysts, scouts, or whatever, to really kind of put on some glasses and really take a close look and finding, you know, kind of the gems out there. But I'll give you a couple names. Okay. I already mentioned Keyshawn George. Big fan of his. I just have a type. I just like guys that are like anywhere from 6'7 to 6'9 that could shoot the ball and have some guard skills. Like, if that's your profile, I'm in on you all the way. I had Jet Howard in my top five last cycle, so I am that guy. I really like Keyshawn. Really like me some Dalton Connect. Let me think. Jared McCain from Duke. Really fun guy. Someone that Corey and I got to meet at the Hoop Summit last year. Just great energy, super charismatic, great guy. You could see him being like a really good leader, but also like he could just do a lot of things. Like him a lot. I am going to avoid a couple names because I know I just know Corey's going to hit some. So I'm going to pass on these here. Okay. If I throw in one more, let me throw kind of like a later-ish name, a guy that's really grown on me that I never, ever, ever thought I would like, but I think is an interesting second-round option. Corey's laughing because he already knows. Look, I saw him play in the Pac-12 tournament in person a couple years ago for Stanford, and I was like, you know, there was some hype to him. He was playing kind of like a lead guard role for them, lead wing role for Stanford. He was doing some creating for them. Just, you know, his shot was not it. And I didn't think he was in good playing shape at that time. But he transferred to UNC. He's really worked on his body, really worked on the shot. And now he's playing kind of a lesser role, but still, because of the role that he played in Stanford, you know that he's got some of that playmaking stuff to him inside of him. And that guy's Harrison Ingram. I was like hard out on him a couple years back, and I was like, he's not going to be good. I was like so set on it. And then I watched him play for UNC this season, and I'm like, well, that's why development exists, and that's why coaches get paid what they get paid, and you know, these programs are successful in creating NBA players because they know how to develop players. And Harrison Ingram, in my opinion, has now developed and grown into an NBA worthy player, a guy that I could see get taken, you know, early second round, maybe even late first, maybe not that high, but at least second round. I think if a team were to grab him, they'd be getting a pretty good player. You know, he's about 6'7" ish, 6'8". He's improved a ton as a shooter, as I mentioned, but a guy that is just, he just looks like a contributor now and has played really well for this UNC team. So I wanted to give him the credit because I was really out on him, but now I'm kind of like, yeah, he should probably get drafted, in my opinion, is where I'm at. So those are a couple of names, and yeah, I'm excited to hear what Corey has.
I love the turnaround, the 180 on Harrison Ingram for Albert, because he was so vehemently like out on him. He's like, yo, we just saw Harrison Ingram. He's like, that pudgy dude sucks. And now he's like all in. He's his biggest supporter. I love it. So as like a deep cut sleeper, because I think No Ceilings is the only outlet that has written about him, given him really any shine. Like, Nick Clifford from Colorado State is a guy that I really like. He's a senior. He's 6'6", 6'7". I think he's one of the top perimeter defenders in college basketball, has really shut down some of the, you know, guys in this draft class when he matched up with them. He's a dribble, pass, shoot, defend guy, like, you know, over 50% from the field, 38% from the three-point line, and then almost 80% from the free throw line. A guy who can really pass the ball too, like guard skills, and he can really put you on a poster. So he's like a deep cut. He's a guy that we have towards, you know, the late second, early first, like as far as value goes, but we'll see. He also good basketball mind. We watched film with him and broke it down in a film session, Albert and I. A guy who's a little bit of a question mark because, you know, people don't necessarily know if he's going to test the waters or not, because he made a comment that he maybe, you know, will be going back to school. But to be honest, I think he's going to end up coming out because he's breaking the advanced stat models and he's throwing up huge numbers every time he plays. And that's Colin Murray Boyles from South Carolina. He's actually another interesting fit with the Thunder, because I think that Chet gives the flexibility to be able to do some pretty funky things with him, but kind of has some early like Kentucky Julius Randle to his game right now, because, you know, the shot hasn't come along, but can really pass the ball, can face you up, can get it done on the post. Super, super interesting defender, can move his feet on the perimeter, strong, long, rumored 7'2 wingspan, so he can, you know, protect the rim, make guys work. I love Colin Murray Boyles. I think he's a top 10 talent in this class, potentially even a top 5. And then my top three guys are Reed Shepard, Nikola Topic, and Stephen Castle. And I love all of them dearly.
All right. Well, hey, I'm sure we're going to talk about Reed here in this next segment here in a second. But yeah, I mean, what was that the South Carolina's guy's name in? Was
Colin Murray Boyles.
Colin Murray Boyles. Okay. Yeah. You, as soon as you said 7'2 wingspan, I'm like, yeah, Sam Press is going to be all over that. He was his wingspan guy. So, yeah. That's all great, man. All right. Well, hey, let's get into the tournament, the NCAA tournament. We're going to talk about picks here in a little bit, but you know, the NCAA tournament is something year after year, you see players rise up or, you know, they let it, you know, the lights are a little bit too bright. But you know, this year, who are a couple players you're watching that you think that they can really help their draft stock or even just their, I guess the public opinion of draft Twitter, if you will, in this year's tournament.
I think Colin Murray Boyles is a guy who can do that. I think it's tricky. I think Stephen Castle actually has a chance with a deep run because for some reason, and maybe it's just because I'm wrong and everyone else is right, but I feel like Stephen Castle just hasn't, like, people are afraid to like place him in the same tier as like the rest of the top 10 guys. And like, he is like hovering outside of the lottery in a lot of places. And I don't get it. I've seen him in person. He is an insane perimeter defender. Like, he competes, he's strong, he's tall. I think he's athletic. You know, he was a point guard in high school. He went toe to toe with Ron Holland in high school, dropped 40 with, you know, like a tissue hanging out of his nose because he had a bloody nose. Like, he's competitive as hell. He is playing in a new role with UConn, who's the best team in college basketball, and got hurt and had to come back. And he's fit in as this like early Chicago Bulls Jimmy Butler type of gadget wing who just goes out and defends his ass off and finds smart opportunities for him to like, you know, either like cut to the hoop for easy baskets, get out in transition. He's just finding ways to contribute all over the floor in an offense that has like a pretty clear hierarchy, of which he is toward the bottom of because they are, you know, they have a lot of older guys on that team. So I think Stephen Castle has a chance to open eyes where people are like, oh, this dude rocks. Especially if he shoots it even like moderately well in the tournament.
Staying on Castle real quick. I heard somebody asked the question. I don't remember what podcast I was listening to, but one of the listeners asked about the possibility of Castle projecting as a wing in the NBA as opposed to kind of a guard. And they use Jalen Williams actually as like the model for that. Like, how do you guys feel about that idea?
I mean, I think if you're looking at Jalen Williams as the model, like, he's a wing because he's 6'5", 6'6", with a 7'2 wingspan. But like, you can make an argument at times he plays like a guard. You can make an argument at times he plays like a forward. Like, he's a guy who swings. So I could see the argument with Castle because that's been his role at UConn. Like, he's not running a million ball screens and like going and looking to get his own offense. I think he's capable of that. But like, I think as a baseline, yeah, he does have an opportunity to play as like a gadgety wing. It's just he has untapped potential based on what we've seen this year because, you know, it's not the type of player that he's always been. And if he was going to a different school where he was featured a little bit more on the ball, like, you know, I think he could look a little bit different. But yeah, I think he could be a wing. But I think if you're pigeonholing him into that role instead of like looking at that as like a baseline and then you're like, oh, but let's try to develop him with some on-ball equity, then I don't think you're maximizing what you could potentially get him to develop into.
Yeah, that's fair. I know that, you know, I mean, everybody was really high on him like early in the season. I know he had his struggles shooting and everything, and you know, he's kind of regulated those numbers a little bit. So I just thought it was an interesting question. Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off.
For me, I think a couple names stood out. The first one that I wanted to bring up, freshman, a guy who coming into the season, there was a lot of hype around him, especially from No Ceilings, had a really tough freshman season, but had a stronger close to the season, which makes me excited about, you know, what he might end up being. Corey knows who I'm talking about because we had him number one in our preseason draft guide thing. And Justin Edwards, what if?
right? For Kentucky. What if, you know, he takes a strong play from the end of the season, carries it into the tournament, and if Kentucky make a little bit of a run here and he plays well alongside the other freshmen, could be good for his stock. And maybe he puts his name back into that, you know, I don't know if I'd say lottery, but who knows? Anything is possible with a guy like him. So wanted to throw Justin Edwards in there. Duke, if they make a run, Tyrese Proctor maybe becomes a guy where people buy back in on him. I'm not the biggest Proctor guy, neither is Corey. I know that. But, I mean, he is a good shooter. Maybe he goes off in tournament. Could be interesting. Baylor Shireman, he's been really productive this season in college. Maybe he has a good tournament. I don't really know where his draft stock is. Last name that I want to throw in there, Johnny Furphy, Kansas, a guy who, his shooting definitely hit a bit of a low point at the end of the season, but he's still 6'9" athletic. And I, in my opinion, and we, Corey and I both think he's a good shooter. So, he could get hot, you know, he could have himself a nice little run here and, turn some heads and really kind of solidify himself within that, you know, lottery conversation. Were a couple of names that came to mind for me.
Okay, I like it. Yeah, I mean, hey, Justin Edwards, man, like he's been crazy here recently for us. It sucks he reverted back to early season form in the SEC tournament. wasn't a fan of that at all. But you know, hopefully, you know, he was just exercising some demons so he can prepare for the stretch run here. But Perthy, I think that. He's a really good name because I just got a notification on my phone. Kevin McCullough is about to miss the entire NCAA tournament with his injury. So, like, Perthy's really going to have to step up, you know, for Kansas to, you know, want to make a run. So, that'll be fun. Obviously, he's been a name that's kind of been trending here recently. I know a lot of people like him because he's Australian, but also he's a very thundery player in terms of, like, you know, the length and kind of, you know, kind of high feel, can do a little bit of everything in terms of a dribble pass shoot. All right, guys, I've been patient. You know me. I know Albert's got to get off here in a second. So, I mean, I've got to ask this question before we get off here. Talks to me about Reed Sheppard.
Corey, I'll go first because I know how you feel about him. Reed is a guy that the more you watch him, in my opinion, the less he makes sense because he is so damn good at basketball. It's kind of unreal. And I'm at the point now where I was thinking about it when we were potting earlier too, like the way that people talk about him being short, I'm like, he's not that short. I mean, we're not talking about Terrell Brandon, Travis Best here. You know, he's not below 6 feet tall. He's still like probably 6'3" ish. Right. Maybe I'm being generous. Yeah, exactly. He's not Tyler. He's above 6 feet. Right. So I'm not too worried about the size stuff with him. What I do care about is the fact that he's just an unbelievable shooter. I like the fact that he can handle the ball, and I think he's better at handling the ball than people are willing to give him credit for. I like the fact that he's really impactful on defense. He's not a perfect defender. Sometimes he gets beat backdoor. Okay. He's a freshman. It happens. And people can also be like, oh, you're just being too easy on him. But look at the high impact plays. Look at some of the steals. Look at some of the blocks. It's unreal stuff, the impact that he has on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, with that comes some mistakes. Sometimes he's going to gamble. Sometimes he's going to get caught ball watching. It's all a part of the experience, you know, and we're not talking about Reed Sheppard as if he's some sort of perfect prospect, right? But the fact that he has those high impact plays in his now film reel is, I think, really, really important to go with the fact that he's an unbelievable shooter. I think he could shoot it off the catch, off movement, off the dribble. And he's just really good at basketball. And I don't think it's that complicated. And I hate hearing about the size concerns because we're living in a day and age where in the NBA, some of the best, most impactful players are small. I'm a diehard Knicks fan. Look at Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson is not even 6'3". He's probably like 6 foot, maybe even shorter than 6 foot, right? And look at the impact that he has every single night. He's going to be an all-NBA guy this season, the way that he's playing, right? So I have no concerns about Reed Sheppard being a really good NBA player is where I pass it off to Corey.
I love it.
When a player shows you who they are, just believe them.
That's a bar.
Like, this dude is really, really, really good. He's having one of the, like, top 10 seasons a freshman has had over the last, like, 16 years. You know, as far back as the Bartorvik database goes. 50-50-80 shooting splits over the course of an entire season absolutely speaks for themselves. Like, it's absolutely bonkers. You know, I was covering the Big East tournament last week, and I spoke to, you know, a bunch of people who work within the league that I met up with, and everybody's kind of coming around where it's like, this dude is just a really good basketball player. I've had executives tell me he is the best college basketball, like best player in college basketball, at least that's like in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And like, he's got a 70.6 true shooting percent. Like, his efficiency is out of control. He rebounds the ball. I think he's a much better playmaker than he's being given credit for. I think he's made, especially recently, some like wow, eye-opening type of passes. But I think that, you know, he's going to be slick enough to really take advantage of all of the space and options that he has with the better players he's going to be playing with that can make teams pay for all the different options that he gets to operate with out of the pick and roll. He's just really good and impactful on both ends. And like, I had a team executive tell me, they're like, he's short, but like, if he just keeps being Klay Thompson, like, what does it matter at a certain point, right? Now, like, you know, most of the teams that I spoke with are not going to be in position to draft Reed. As a matter of fact, one of the teams was like, yeah, we're a little upset because we thought we were going to have an opportunity to draft him. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, he just continued to be awesome the entire season. But like, you know, he's also in a weird system. You know, we talk about the Kentucky bump for draft prospects, right? Like, you know, you guys play at Kentucky, they, you know, this like egalitarian type share the ball, everybody gets a chance. And, you know, it, between Reed and Rob and Antonio Reeves and DJ Wagner and like even, you know, some of the other guys that are, you know, like Vesic, will, you know, let him do some stuff with the ball in his hands when he plays.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Out of like DHOs and stuff, there's a lot of people to share the ball handling duties with. So it's like the fact that he's averaging 4.5 assists per game as is, and he's not even, would you call him like the third, the 3B option with the ball in his hands, right? Like, probably. That's pretty good. It's pretty good. And again, he's shooting 50% from three. If things tail off and he becomes a 40% three-point shooter in the league, still pretty good. Albert, you know, we got to give credit to Albert because he came up with, you know, possibly the greatest comp of all comps. You know, he's been doing the 90s NBA player comp thing since we've been doing the pod, and comparing Reed Sheppard to Mark Price is, you know, really his finest moment. Because you see it. I went back and watched the Mark Price games, and like, it's, he's like modern day Mark Price, but his processing, he's just, he rocks, man. He's awesome. Like, if he was 6'5", he's going number one with no questions asked, and he would be so far ahead of the field that it's not even funny. People would be talking about him like he is a generational prospect. Like, they would be talking about him in the same tier as like a Luka Doncic type guy. If he was doing what he was doing in college basketball right now at 6'5", people would be putting him in that upper echelon tier. He's not 6'5". Obviously, that presents challenges that you have to worry about, so that's hypothetical, but like, he's still putting up top tier production. So the same way I started it, when a prospect is showing you who they are, sometimes you should believe them.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I just really quickly, because I actually have to head out at this point, but everything that Corey said is so on the money about Reed. And you know what? Just have him play in LeBron's. It'll give him 2 inches and he's 6'5". We're done. We're good. And he'll be incredible. And the thing about Reed that, you know, with everything that Corey said and we talked about, just the impact with him is unbelievable. Just unbelievable. And I just feel like maybe sometimes it's the haircut. Corey always talks about him having a supercut haircut. Maybe that's why, you know, he doesn't get all the attention that he deserves. But the reason why I said Mark Price when we did our pod on him was just because there's untapped potential with Reed with the ball in his hands, like Corey mentioned. Like, it's, he just hasn't had the opportunity, but on the next level, he might. And he might really show the type of stuff that he's got with the ball in his hands, because the playmaking, the handle, the shooting, all of it coming together. And for listeners out there, go tap into some Mark Price tape, dude, and compare it to Reed and tell me I'm crazy. I don't think it's crazy. And in this class, if you can get modern day Mark Price, he should go really, really high is what I'll say.
That's what's up. Albert, great tapping in with you, man. We'll definitely touch base once we hit real draft season.
Sounds good. Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you, man. Corey, I do want to stay with Reed for a second here, because he is, as you can imagine, a very polarizing prospect in terms of, I mean, NBA draft spaces, but like Thunder draft spaces specifically. Like, obviously,
yeah.
I'm a huge UK guy, so everybody automatically thinks, oh, he's wearing blue, of course Thunder chassis is going to be supporting him. Like, no, like, this guy obviously could play, like you were saying, like one of the top 10 seasons as a freshman. I think at some point in the season, you tweeted out he has an efficiency profile that rivals Zion Williamson and Anthony Davis as a guard. Like, just absurd stuff. The thing, if I'm playing devil's advocate, and also like putting my fan hat on at the same time, the thing that frustrates me the most is kind of what makes me think he will be an effective pro. It's the fact that he doesn't need the ball in his hands and he doesn't demand the ball, and he still finds ways to impact the game. He's consistently moving the ball. He's consistently moving without the ball. Disruptive defender, like one of like the most disruptive defenders Kentucky's had. Like, you know, we just had Casey Wallace, and Casey Wallace is like a really like great defender, off ball, on ball, whatever. But like in terms of generating steals and like stocks, you know, because he's getting blocks as a guard. Like Reed Shepard is like the whole package on that front. And the thing that frustrates me the most is, you know, whenever I bring up like, hey, like let's draft Reed Shepard, like he'd be perfect for this team. He like, he's such a Thunder player. And everybody's like, well, he's too short. And we kind of dispelled that. I kind of see him, I'll get into comps in a second, but I kind of see him as like a mixture, like at his ceiling between like a Jalen Brunson, Desmond Bane type player. Now, I'm just throwing random comps out there. Like I said, I'm still grinning and smiling like an idiot at this point in the draft process. But and then the other thing everybody says is, you know, we have too many guards. And it's like, listen, I get it. There's guards and then there's Kentucky guards. And we just got Casey Wallace, and you guys were saying the exact same thing to me last draft cycle, and look how great he's been. So what's your thoughts about Reed Shepard and his fit on the Thunder? Not necessarily like with the pieces that we have, like, you know, in terms of him getting on the floor, but like in terms of his play style.
Oh, well, he certainly fits the play style. I mean, there's no question about that. I mean, yeah, like the hit aheads, the quick one mores, the, you know, ability to make an impact when he only has the ball in his hands for like a half a second, right? That 0.5 style. He absolutely 100,000,000% fits the Thunder style. And I mean, if he's there and the Thunder are picking, like, hype be damned, fit be damned, you gotta take him. Like,
yeah,
at that point, he's just so good, right? And yeah, like, you want to upsize a little bit, you know, eventually, like, and have that positional optionality that we kind of talked about, even on the wing. And like, you know, maybe that's why, you know, you drafted a guy like Usman Jang, who's like really big for a wing. It's maybe why you went out and traded for Gordon Hayward, right? Like, who's like a little bit bigger and stronger. So you obviously want that on your roster and you value this positional size, but at a certain point there are outlier players who you just have to add to your team if you have the like option to add them. And Reed is one of those guys, especially, you know, putting as many floor spacers on the floor as you possibly can. Why not get like one of the best shooters college basketball's ever seen? Like, nobody's, I think it was Glenn Rice is the last person to shoot over 50% from three in over the course of a college season, like outside of a guy like Aaron Naismith, who played like 10 games when he did it, and then he got hurt. Like, Reed has played a full college season and done it, and he's the first since Glenn Rice, who has long been retired. So, yeah, I mean, again, like, could he play with Shea? Yeah, he could. Can he play with Giddy? Yeah. Can he play with Kaysen? Yeah. Can he play with Jay Dub? Yeah. Can he play? He could play with everybody. So, like, there's no, it's just a roster crunch issue at that point, right? Like, where it's like, well, we want to develop this guy, we want to develop that guy. That's the only thing that would hold you back. But, like, J Dub's big and strong, and you can play him at the four. Like, you'll find ways to get all of these guys enough minutes, and you just add another guy who every minute he's on the court, is probably going to be valuable.
Yeah. And, like, you know, like you said, the roster crunch thing, like, you know, Aaron Wiggins, Isaiah Joe are two guys that are coming up on extensions at this point. And, you know, I love both those players, like Thunder, like, you know, they're beloved in Thunder fan circles, but like Isaiah Joe specifically, like a guy that could shoot like that and has, you know, improved defensively, he's going to demand a big contract in this NBA. You know, he might give you a little bit of a discount, but at the same time, it's still going to be a lot more than what he is right now. Part of the beauty with Isaiah Joe is the production and the contract that he's on right now. Whenever, you know, and because I love Isaiah Joe, he's streaky as heck. And if you have that inconsistency with that bigger number, and not a lot of impact elsewhere, you know, it gets a little bit dicey. So if you were able to bring in Reed Shepherd on a rookie contract, and, you know, as much as it breaks my heart, you let Isaiah Joe, you know, go separate ways, then, you know, he kind of fills in that role. That's kind of my summation of that. Because, you know, like we was talking about with just the glimpses that he's had, like, he doesn't demand the basketball, but like when he has it, like, I don't remember what game it was. It was the Tennessee game. Rob had foul trouble early on, and Reed felt the need to, like, step up. And, like, there's just pockets in the game. Like, not the entire game, but there's pockets in the game he absolutely takes over.
He understands the flow.
Yeah. And even in, like, the SEC tournament, man, like, he had 10 points in, like, 4 minutes at the end of the first half, and I don't think he shot the ball again in the second half. Like, it's infuriating, but also it's like, it's infuriating as a Kentucky fan, but like it's tantalizing as like a draft prospect kind of thing.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's not like he disappears. Like some of these guys, you're like, he had 10 points and he's still involved.
Yeah.
He's very decisive in what he's doing. So if he doesn't feel like he needs to step in and get shots up, it's because he understands the tempo of the game and how the flow of the game is impacting team. So the fact that he doesn't force it, but when he does get the ball in his hands, he's going to make a decisive decision, whether that is quickly moving off and swinging the ball to the next open guy or making a scoring move. And I think that is so valuable in the league now. And I think Reed is going to, you know, he's got the potential to be a special player in the league in the long term. And so, I mean, I hope he ends up in a good situation, like, you know, on a team like the Thunder that understand development, have a good offensive structure, have good players that he would fit in with. And, you know, obviously it'll be hard to put him in a situation where he wouldn't fit in with other players because he is, you know, so his game is so adaptable to any kind of situation. But like, I would cry if he ended up on the Wizards, you know, for just a team that's like perpetually like just not developing their guys to the fullest extent. Although Denny and Corey Kispert are good basketball players, and Denny's been awesome this year. And, you know, the new front office, so maybe things will change there. But like, putting him next to Jordan Poole, and where I got to watch Jordan Poole chuck up, you know, terrible shots. Like, I would feel bad for Reed in that scenario. Just as a Reed fan, I want him to go somewhere, you know, where he could reach his fullest potential because everything is clicking from his development to the team's development.
That's like the Ashton Hagans award for the NBA.
Yeah.
Putting him next to Jordan Poole. The last thing I kind of want to say about Reed, you know, my worst nightmare scenario, and something that I feel is getting more and more possible and plausible every day, is that he ends up with the San Antonio Spurs. I think you guys actually had him mocked in your last mock draft going to the Spurs. KLC had him mocked going to the Spurs. it makes too much sense. And, you know, all the things that we talked about against your team, and he is a more than capable guy and to get shots for Wimby, and, you know, a team that like has struggled to like get Wimby the ball in scenarios to, you know, to benefit him. Like, you know, he's succeeded in spite of it because he's Victor Wembanyama. But if you give him Reed Sheppard, like, I'm, as a Thunder fan in the Western Conference, I'm terrified.
Yeah. For what it's worth, I've had someone tell me, like, look, you know, I'm telling you now, the Spurs are not taking Reed Sheppard. Okay. And like somebody who like is trustworthy, who has told me that. Now, we still fought for him to be mocked to San Antonio after I've heard that, because like you said, the fit is just so good. And if you have any defensive concerns because he is on the smaller side, like having the defensive infrastructure of Victor Wembanyama behind you, and then having, you know, a wing like Devin Vassell, who theoretically is a very good defender, and was an excellent defender coming out of college. So I think at this season, you're also at like, you know, you're not going to hear the God's honest truth from everybody at this point. You know, you're going to get smoke screens and stuff like that. So I wouldn't call it impossible, but I have had somebody, you know, every time, you know, when they see us mocking, they're like, dude, this is not happening. I'm like, all right.
See, I just need you to, like, as a scout, reach out to you, just like subtly start crapping on Reed Sheppard so he drops to where the Thunder are. That's what I need you to do, Corey. But hey, we talked about Reed for probably more than anything in this podcast. So let's get back to the tournament as we kind of wrap this up. Corey, I mean, obviously you're a draft analyst. You know, you follow the NBA. Obviously, you follow the college game, and you're a human, so you're filling out a college bracket. Final four predictions, Corey. What you got?
UConn.
Mm-hmm.
Houston.
That hurts, Corey.
My heart says that Houston is going to win it all. My head says they're not. Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And because I haven't filled out a bracket yet. And I'm going to go North Carolina.
North Carolina. All right. Well, my producer, Matt Tierney, the producer of the show, he is a huge UNC Tar Heel guy. So he's going to be doing victory laps that you put them in their final four, not Kentucky. So appreciate that. So I guess how the bracket surmises, do you have Houston beating Kentucky in the Elite Eight? You got Kentucky going out earlier. Yeah. You just might be even more sad.
No, I would have them. Yeah, I'd have them. Actually, you know what? No, I'd probably see it. It all depends on where Tyler Kolek's at.
Yeah.
Health wise. That's it. If Tyler Kolek is balling, then I think they go down to Marquette.
Heartbreaking. Another loss to friggin' Marquette in the tournament. That'd be three in a row for the Kentucky Wildcats. So that's all we need. Thanks for that, Corey.
Yeah, well, I'm a big Kolek guy too, so I got to balance my emotions.
Yeah, he's how many games has he missed?
It's been a decent amount. I was bummed out that he wasn't playing in the Big East tournament because I was so excited to
get an
updated look at him in person there at the Garden. Yeah, it's been a decent amount. So, you know, working yourself back into shape and you know, recovering in the tournament itself is probably not the best place to work out, you know, the kinks ultimately. But, you know, Cam Jones been cooking. I love Chase Ross. You know, Oso Iguodaro is a really fun piece. Joplin is a great shooter. Like, they got a ton of pieces outside of Kolek, but I think Kolek is, you know, they need a fully healthy squad to get by. But look, the tournament is also about like getting hot at the right time. And like, it is completely within the realm of possibility that like Rob Dillingham just averages like 30 points a game for a 4-game stretch, you know, like that. It's like completely within the realm of possibility that happens. So that's going to be a fun, you know, side of the bracket.
Yeah, I was really excited because, you know, obviously the early season struggles, but it's all about how you're playing in March. And I thought we was playing our best basketball of the season, and then we just, like, everything reverted back to early season form in that game against Texas A&M. So, you know, hopefully, you know, we got that out of our system. Let's get back to the basketball we've been playing and, you know, go on a little run here. Last question I want to ask you, because somebody actually shout out Kevin Scott. In the chat, he asked about Zvonimir Avisic. I want to hear what you think about Zvonimir Avisic as a draft prospect this year, or do you think that he's going to come back and, you know, try to go in the next year's draft?
Ooh, it's a good question. I think that if he went out this year, somebody would draft him.
Yeah, just on potential alone.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think somebody would draft him, but I don't know if he would get a first round promise.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly within the realm of possibility because, I mean, he is super skilled, obviously. But I think there are a lot of questions about how he's defending at a pro level. I think he should stay and develop and be a guy who could play 25 minutes a game every game and you know, show that he's this versatile 7-foot weapon on both ends. But, you know, at this time of the year, when you start getting agents involved and you have, you know, the people who are friends and family members, it's so hard to find those like guys who could go either way to definitively be like, yeah, they're going to stay or they're not going to stay. Like, you know, there are times where like I've heard like, guys who are agents that are representing a client, like, well, some I've heard guys find out that they're returning to school like on Twitter, you know, yeah. Like it, because so it's yeah, it's one of those things where like I don't even know how, if I could feel confident definitively saying either way of what he would do.
Yeah, I like Z because, I mean, you know, like you said, the skill is a lot of fun. He plays with swagger. Like, he's got that Chet A-hole in him.
Yeah.
But, man, I've got Poku STD when it comes to these these long-rangey white there's guys that can do with everything.
He's got some Poku-itis. He's definitely closer to Poku than Chet on the range of outcomes.
Yeah, absolutely. He's like... He's got some of the good qualities from Chet, but like all the worst qualities of Poku. So it's a ride with Z for sure. I was gonna say something else. Oh yeah, no. Yeah, you was talking about guys like, you know, coming out of the draft and you know, coming back to college for a year. Like, man, there's so many Kentucky fans that have convinced themselves that Reese Shepard's coming back for next year because all these other like former Kentucky players are saying, like, don't rule it out, he might come back. I'm like, brother, like yeah. I would love that as a Kentucky fan, but that would be stupid for Reed.
Yeah, there ain't enough NIL money out there to get Reed to stay. And I heard that he signed with an agent.
There you go.
Too. So, yeah, I would heavily bet against it. If those odds are available somewhere, I would bet against him staying. And then, again, it comes down to it's not even like – you're preventing your second contract from getting here earlier. Like it just, you know, monetarily you're missing out on just so much by staying if you don't have to, especially when like he's probably going to be at minimum like a top 10 pick at this point.
Yeah, for sure. All right. If he's at minimum top 10 pick, he's there right in the Thunder window. So let's hope we get him. But Corey, man, you've been most gracious with your time coming on here, man. Always a great time to talk shop. I could talk Kentucky basketball forever. I never get to talk Kentucky basketball. So this was kind of my outlet a little bit. So always appreciative of you guys coming on. Shout out Albert as well. Want to give you the floor. Anything you want to plug, anything you might be working on that the Top Thunder listeners could tune into?
Yeah, head to noceilingsnba.com for all of the team's written work. You find links to the YouTube channel where we're posting videos, you know, every single day. You get the live podcast there. You know, Albert and I, we go live every week. Tyler and Tyler go live every week. And Maxwell goes live every week. So, and then if you're more of a podcast listener where you consume it in your car, you can download the No Ceilings NBA podcast. anywhere you get your podcasts available. You can follow me at Corey Teleba on Twitter, the NBA Draft Dude elsewhere. We all got some fun stuff cooking up. I got some fun film sessions where I break down film with prospects scheduled and in the works that I'm really excited about, that I'll be recording this week. And then, you know, got to edit and do that whole thing. So I don't know when they'll be out, but those are coming out. Those are always my favorite thing to work on. Back when I was behind the scenes, you know, editing for Schmitz, to now where I'm now in front of the camera, breaking down the film with, you know, the prospects themselves. So I think it's some of the most valuable stuff that I've either, you know, been able to be a part of just from getting to pick the mind of the guys who are actually on the floor. So, that's the thing I'm probably most excited for that I got coming up down the pipe for No Ceilings.
Oh, absolutely, man. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because, like, especially, like, you know, obviously, like, LeBron and JJ dropped their pod today, Mind the Game. Yeah. And it's really cool how you get to go in the mind of a basketball player, like, you know, their understanding of the game. And, you know, you hear about, you know, players having high basketball IQ. And, like, whenever you have these prospects on for, like, you know, the game film breakdown, like, you actually get to see it, like, in practice, like, you know, their thought process and, like, you know, their basketball IQ in practice. So it was awesome when Schmitz did it. It was one of my favorite things that ESPN put out. Yeah, and it's awesome that you're carrying it on. So, hey, you're the GOAT as well, Corey. Come on now.
So appreciate it.
But obviously, we'll have you guys back on once the draft season comes along. We've added a few new faces to No Ceilings. I've got to bring on the pod as well. We always try to get the whole team on here. So, y'all have been killing it. You got the premium stuff going on with the professional teams as well. So, absolutely, man. Y'all are tearing it up. And, like, literally, like, ever since you started, like, you guys, I don't think you guys have slowed down one bit. You've just been trending in the same direction. So, congrats to you guys. Very, very happy for all your success. And always a pleasure to talk shop with you.
Always have a great time when you have me on, man. So I appreciate you letting me come talk Kentucky basketball with you.
Hey, somebody's got to. So, but guys, with that being said, that's going to put it into the podcast. We will be back on Friday after we play the Raptors. So post game after the Raptors game, some of the guys will be on here. We'll be recapping that game and also the Jazz game tomorrow. So don't miss out on that. Let us know in the comments who your picks are for the Final Four and tell me why Marquette will not beat Kentucky for the third time in a row. I would appreciate that. But as always, hope you all have a great night. God bless. Hoop when you can. And as always, Thunder up.
Thunder up.
Yeah, Corey.
Thank you for listening to the Topic Thunder podcast. Our podcast is available to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play, or anywhere else you listen to your podcast. Be sure to leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review, and follow us on Twitter at OKC Topic Thunder.
Thunder up!
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.